Hi, this is Mary Elizabeth Macari, the Magic Apothecary, bringing you a podcast, continuing my New York City Witches of the Past and Present podcast series for May 2019. I am working with today Joe Zukowski and Jezebel Anat, A-N-A-T. You can find them both on Facebook if you are so inclined. These people were people I studied with back in the 90s and again in the early 2000s in a place called Enchantments, which if you listen to my Lady Rhea podcast, you will understand a little bit about that place and what it represented to a lot of people in New York City when it was the old Enchantments. There is an Enchantments still, but it's in a different place and it has different owners and they don't do classes there like they did before. It's a bit of a different kind of a place. So when in the 1990s, mid-90s, and in the early 2000s, I took classes with both of these wonderful people and learned many, many things. And I got to be in contact with not only them, but many people who were working alongside them in this store and other people that I met through them who participated in things like Jezebel will mention later on, like the Witches' Balls of New York City, New Moon New York, and other such things. So I hope you have a good time listening to them. Jezebel is a dancer, an actress, a poet, a writer, a singer, and she is also a high priestess and a teacher of Wicca, as well as a pretty fabulous historian. And Joe, although he was right there in the middle of Enchantments, was really, you know, as a worker, was really a force to be reckoned within that store and within the pagan community. He is also an actor. He's also a writer, and he's now talking about creating woodworking stuff that he does. And he's a wonderful speaker and a really cool, all-around nice man, too. So I hope you enjoy this lovely podcast. And please forgive the sound quality a little bit on their phone. It was a little off just because it was just long distance, I think, and it was raining. So I think that was part of it. At least it was raining where I am. And the music was a little loud where I am. Hope you enjoy it anyway. Thank you. Speak to you at the end.
Hey there, how you doing?
I'm good. This is Mary Macari with the Magic Apothecary podcast. I'm speaking to some wonderful witches that I've known for a long time on the phone today, and we're recording, and you're going to be on our podcast. This is Joe and Jezebel and Zukowski. That was your last name. That's
Zoo,
fine.
Zukowski. Zukowski, yes.
Yes, we can know his last name. He's not hiding his secret. It's good. We're open and free about being witches. Not everybody is, so that's cool. So here they are on the phone, coming from Georgia, right? Where are you guys now? Where are you?
Augusta, Georgia.
Augusta, beautiful place. That's beautiful there.
Yes.
Yeah. Ah, nice. Yeah, I'm sure it is. Yeah, we're talking to these guys. We're talking to them late May, early June, so it's already warm in the South. Not so
warm. You can fry eggs on the street.
Well, that's what you get for going down there. That's it.
Yeah, well.
So,
the rent is cheaper.
I'm sure, and a different kind of life. That's what I wanted to talk about. Let's start asking questions. I'll ask questions, and you guys will you jump in anytime you want, and you can talk for as long as you like. It's unlimited amount of conversation. So, how's things down there? How's witchcraft in Georgia? What's that like?
Well, it's changed a bit since we've been down here. We've been active in a lot of progressive things here in Augusta. It's still pretty much under wraps. I mean, there's a very strong Christian sentiment here, but like every other religion, they vary. Some Christians are very liberal and progressive, and some are very conservative and regressive, for lack of a better word, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
We're connected with the Unitarian Universalist Church down here, and Jess and I run an open monthly circle, and I make myself available for teaching or consulting if anybody asks of me.
Oh, great. That's good. That's wonderful. So you feel like it's a little bit of a different life as a witch in the South than it would be here in New York City, obviously.
Oh, yes. It's a lot slower, and it's a lot more informal. down here saying if you're invited to a circle, you better expect there's going to be a barbecue attached to it.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I've been down in the South, and I've been down in Georgia, and I love it down there. It's beautiful. You know, so it's a wonderful place. I've been in Augusta. I've been through, like, most of Georgia. When I was much younger, I did a theater tour through the South. So I saw a lot of things down there. Yeah. So what I was doing was I was starting to talk about, the reason I asked you guys to participate in this is because I'm doing this podcast and interviewing people about, you know, what it was like to be a witch in New York City and during a certain period of time, up to maybe around the year 2000 or so. It's very different now. So yeah. I spoke to Lady Rhea. I'm going to speak to Carol Buzon also about enchantments.
Right.
You know, and I'm trying to get as many people like as I can on the phone about that one particular subject. And so I thought of you guys. And, of course, Joe, you worked in the store for a long, long time.
So, 10 years.
Tell me about...
Right, so I worked there from 95 to 2005, yes.
Right, that's a long time to be an enchantment. So tell me about enchantments. Tell me about what that was. So people are listening to us all over the country. Actually, people listen to us up being in Australia and England as well. So tell them what that was.
Hey, how y'all doing down there? Hello. Happy Midwinter to you all.
That's right.
Once the jolly flagman camping on the Dillaban on the good one. I'm so loud they can hear me because I think I just have to open a window. What was it like in enchantment?
What was it like at the beginning when you first started? Like, they were already established by 1995, obviously.
Oh, yes. Enchantment opened up around, I believe it opened up in 81. And it was opened up by Carol and Rhea, who knew each other from their days as a magical child.
Right.
Now, I remember New York in the 70s and 80s, the craft and magical scene is way different.
Mm-hmm.
From what it is now, the groups were more centered around the stores that existed. I mean, we had Magical Child, we had White Shirt, we had West Books, we had Enchantments. In 81. And of course, there were the sprinklings of the Botanicas up in Spanish Harlem and up in the Bronx and all that. We did not have internet.
Right.
We had to send carrier pigeons or smoke signals or telephones. And we were very much into guerrilla operations. Like, if anybody wanted handouts, generally we hoped somebody worked in an office and they had access to a copying machine. So we did a lot of guerrilla handout printing that way. There was the OTO. The OTO was still out there, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
The Order of Temple Orientalists. They used to hold their Gnostic masses at Magical Child, which was run by Herman Slater.
Right.
Now, the Magical Child goes back to the days of the old Warlock shop back in Brooklyn.
Right.
And now when Herman relocated it, Herman and Ed Buzinski relocated into Manhattan in the late 70s.
Right.
And they was at that, and those who remember the days of the old Magical Child will remember that they had the old Warlock shop sign in the window. And in its heyday, I just want to talk a little bit about the Magical Child because it was like the store. They had an old catalog which was printed on newsprint, and it was dozens of pages. They had herbs, they had candles, they had records, they had CDs, they had magical equipment, they had incense, they did tarot readings, they had tarot cards, they had jewelry, everything your little heart desires.
It was like the Amazon of witchcraft stores, right?
Exactly. Well, Carolyn Paula, then they'll correct many mistakes I make, and I love them both dearly. They came out of the Magical Child, and they established enchantments on East 9th. It's still there, but not in the original location.
Mm-hmm,
It was relocated a few years back.
Yeah, moved another block away, closer to Avenue A now, yeah.
Correct, yes, yes. And it's been years since I've been up there, and it's been years since I've been to the shop, so I can't really tell you anything about the new enchantment. So, you know, please don't ask me any questions about that.
No, that's okay. Maybe I'll speak to her if I can get her on the phone, too, just to to finish the circle, you know. So yeah. So how is it? You so you when you came into enchantments, you sound like it was very like, you know, like it's almost like a mom and mom shop, right?
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah. And it was much, much, much smaller than the Maxwell Trials. You got two people, and they would have spread their arms out there. So I do have a, you know, you got two people that were, let's say, about 5'6", 5'7", and they stretch their arms out to either side. That'd be about the width of the store.
Yeah, yeah, it was little, I remember. But it was chock full of stuff. Boy, was it full of things.
Oh, was it ever. In its heyday, yeah. There were books on top of books. We had everything that the Maxwell Child had. And when we got the second side, originally the storeroom was Carolyn Rea's office in the back, mm. And they had the garden. And the garden is really what made enchantments. That's where they had all their circles, and they had Pagan Way there. Jez and I told Pagan Way there. Mm-hmm. They had the Minoan Sisterhood. You can talk to Carolyn Rea about the Minoan Sisterhood.
Yeah, no, I did a little bit. Rea told me a lot about that. That was great. Yeah.
Oh, Rhea's wonderful. I love her to death.
Yeah.
So to say the same with Carol. What do you call that? I mean, I give Babylon and...
No, I want you to Babylon. That's good, because people don't... You know what it is?
Babylon, yes.
Because it's different. Okay. You know, people go into enchantments now, sure. But more, I'd say, because I've been over there, and I try to still be part of that. It's more of a curiosity, and people sometimes go in for candles. But you can get any book you want online now. You can get any charm, any talisman, any herb.
Yes.
You know, any book, you can watch YouTube videos and get education if you want to, even not if you're not able to get to a place that has it. So you know that it's a whole different kind of thing for the millennial and forward generations. They have a different view of things.
True, and I have my pause, and you know me for years. I'm so shy and held back.
Oh, yeah, yeah, you both are. Yeah, it's terrible.
I know, it's awful. You won't get a word out of me. I can see the advantages and the disadvantages of it. The advantages are there's a lot. I'm glad it's out there. I really, truly am.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the downside is when you are, you know, meeting with your, quote, coven online where none of you actually have ever met each other, it loses something in the personal contact.
Yeah, I agree. Mm-hmm.
Also, the problem with I think a lot of the online teaching is it's really hard to develop a relationship with somebody, a trusting, supportive relationship with somebody, if you're talking to this person online and you really don't know them from a hole in the ground and they you. I mean, that's the thing. That was the one thing about Pagan Way, the Grove, as we called it, was the fact that, you know, people were teaching. We were dedicating, you know, our time to teaching this, and we wanted to make it as real and practical and hands-on as possible.
Right.
And the fact, like you said, I mean, I can go on Amazon right now and order up a shitload. Can I say shitload?
Yeah, you curse all you like. It's fine.
Okay, I can order up a shitload of books.
Right.
And, you know, and everything I need or want and it's right there.
Right, right.
But I still think there's a lot of I do woodworking, I do bead stringing, I like to do stuff like that, and I'm, you know, and I make wands and staves and
nice.
What have you there. Yeah, I've started doing, I used to do a little bit of that up in New York, but down here because the house we have, it's got a small shed. I got some basic tools. I got some power tools.
Nice.
Device, things
good.
Like that. Actually, I have a lot of them. We have trees.
Yeah, yay.
And I can go down to a local hardware store and get everything I need, including the wood to make wands if I want, to make, you know, really fancy ones or make basic ones using branches.
Right.
And that's one of the things, you see. Down here, the big difference between up north and down here is down here a lot of people make their own equipment.
Mm, okay.
Make their own stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Unless they, like as I'm saying, want something really fancy.
Right.
Then you go online, then you go to Ren Fairs, things like that. Ren Fairs are pretty popular down here.
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah.
We were at a small one just this past weekend. We were doing Shakespeare.
Oh, nice.
But but we did supernatural Shakespeare, and we took some scenes from the plays The Tempest, Hamlet, and Macbeth, and Puck from Midsummer's Night's Dream. And it went over pretty well, so we're working on something, and we'll be working on it again. But going back to Enchantment,
mm-hmm.
The one thing I liked about Enchantment, especially in the early, early days, was it was more of a feeling of intimacy. That was the one thing about the craft community back in the 70s and 80s, and maybe the 60s too. That's a little bit before my time, but not too much.
Mm-hmm.
But there was more of a feeling of intimacy then.
Right.
There was more secrecy, there was more, but in that sense, when you were initiated into a coven, it had a lot more importance. It had a lot more meaning. Back in Carolyn and Rhea probably have told you the same thing.
Yeah.
Well, am I speaking too quickly? I'm in
New
York.
No. It's good. It's a lot of stuff to say. It's like such an experience. I mean, you have 10 years of experience. Like, so I remember. I took your grove.
I was initiated. Excuse me.
Yeah.
10 years of experience. I was initiated in my first.
Oh no! Yes. Yeah, no, I know that, but I meant as a person in the store itself in New York. Yeah. So let's go back to 19. Let's talk about where were you initiated in New York City, or you were initiated someplace else, or.
I can't really tell you too many details. It was a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away.
That's okay.
I was initiated back in my hometown of Jersey City.
Oh, okay. So back when you were still a teenager,
How I got into the craft is a bit of an amusing story.
Go ahead.
I don't mind sharing it. What happened was this. I used to play D&D, Dungeons mm-hmm. and Dragons.
Okay.
And I always had an interest in the occult, all right? Well, one of the guys in my D&D group, a guy named Mark, who, you know, I can't even remember his last name, or I tried him on Facebook, he said, "Hey, Joe, you're into this witchcraft and all this woo-woo stuff, right?" I said, "Yeah, I'm interested in why." He said, I know a real witch."
Mm.
And automatically my little warning voice going, "I know Mark, he's a joker, he liked me, sure." He says, "No, I swear to God, she is a real witch." And I'm like, "Sure." I said, "You want to meet her or don't you?" I said, "Yeah, sure." So I met her, and the woman, her name was Danny. And we got to talking, and she asked me, "Why am I interested in the craft?" And I said, "I don't know, it just feels right." And she said, "Well, would you be interested in studying it?" And I said, "Sure, why not?" She said, "Okay, bring a notebook and come to, and here's my address, and there you go."
Mm.
So I showed up, and there were about four or five of us, and we were talking, and she introduced me to Wicca, and I was 18 when I started training with her. I was initiated when I was 19,
nice.
And I was made a high priest when I was about 23.
Nice, very nice.
So do the math. This all happened. This started in 75.
Okay.
So that's
a while ago.
How far back? Yes. And
that's great.
It was a pretty standard. I mean. I have to tell you one funny story.
Mm-hmm.
I know many funny stories.
You should be writing those down, you know, but you should do your own podcast. That's what I think, you know.
Okay, this is a quick one, then you can ask Jez some questions.
Yes, of course.
Just sit there.
No, of course.
Okay, so here's a funny one. I remember the first time I assisted in an initiation, and I was the guardian at the threshold. And I was supposed to say, "Better it would be for you to throw yourself upon this naked blade than enter a circle into the circle with fear in your heart." And that was what I was supposed to say. The young woman is standing there, and I put the asame against her. That's the ceremonial dagger. I put it against her heart, and I forgot the words. I totally blanked.
Yeah, it could happen, right?
Yes. And what happens next is my high priestess is over here going, "Battery with me." You know, she's nodding the words so that, you know, and I'm fixated on this young woman in front of me. I'm going, "Ah, yeah, yeah." Finally, I just said, "Are you sure you really want to do this?"
The translation, the common English translation. Yeah.
Exactly. The modern 20th century translation was, "Are you sure you really want to do this?"
That's funny.
For about 2 minutes, the whole coven just burst out laughing.
That's hysterical. Well, see, it doesn't have to be scary.
If witches could really turn people into toads, I'd be still living on a diet of flies right now, okay?
That's funny. Well, yeah. It's scary sometimes, yeah. And people are, it's scary, but at the same time, it's human. We're human, right? We're human. We make mistakes, and it's not as serious as people might think it is. Sometimes it's serious, but it doesn't have to be so strict,
That's what also attracted me to paganism was the fact that I came out of a Catholic household, okay?
Mm-hmm, me too.
I was raised, but I was, my family, I'll be honest with you, they were more nominal Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
They were the, it's Christmas, Easter.
Yeah.
You show up at church because they were more non-theistic than they were. They just did this because this was how they were raised.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. It was more of a mechanical thing. And you're always hearing I was always hearing that, you're not, the first thing you're told when you're being raised in Catholicism or any branch of Christianity is that you have this sin on your soul from Adam and Eve and this and that, right? I mean, that's a head trip.
Yeah.
But what I really started liking about paganism was when you looked at the God concept, and that was the simple fact that they were as human as we were. They were more powerful, but they were human.
Flawed, yeah.
In the sense of they had flaws,
right.
They made mistakes,
right.
They got jealous, they got angry. And they had to pay reparations sometimes for their acts.
Right.
And none of the gods was one all great, powerful that knew everything or everyone. That was part of the attraction was. I'm not saying it was okay to be a screw up.
Mm-hmm. Right.
No, it's not. But it's something that you're a flawed human being, and this is what I want to say to anybody, any seekers out there who are looking for the right, the perfect coven.
Mm.
You want to find the perfect coven? It's in your imagination.
True,
okay?
Yes.
The perfect coven is in your imagination. Don't go any further.
Mm-hmm.
If you want a coven where nobody ever fights, where nobody has problems, where nobody gets on each other's nerves, stick to your imagination. Otherwise, you're going to be dealing with people that have just as many flaws and issues as you do, some maybe more.
Right.
I've heard horror stories, which I don't want to get into right now.
Right.
About abuses and things
of
like
course,
that.
Yes.
But the point is, there's no such thing as a perfect coven.
Mm-hmm.
There is no such thing as a perfect high priest or high priestess.
Right.
That's a big lie.
Right.
We are human. No matter how much we learn, there's always more to learn. No matter how much we think we've done and how much we've progressed, no, there's always room.
Right. Good. I'm glad you said that. That's good. And, you're going to help a lot of people out. So you were teaching. I actually took your Grove twice, and I talk about that a lot, you guys. I took your Grove back in 96, and I took it again in 2003 because I needed a more of a nourishment.
Refresher.
Yeah, refresher, or just to do it again because it was one of the most – in both cases, I don't know if I've ever said, and, Jezza hear this too, was – both cases was one of the most glorious experiences of my life because it was.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
We'll tell you to $20 in the morning.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. But no, I'm serious because I learned so much, and I was in that store, and I was with like-minded people, there and working together, and you guys were so creative. And I'm a theater person, which I talk about a lot on this podcast, and you guys are theater people, so it was that kind of vein of real cool, fun, joyous Sabbaths and moon rituals and all kinds of creative stuff that went on, music and dance, and I don't want to discount any of that. I know Jezebel has a lot to do with that, especially dance and music. She wants to talk.
I'm sure for 5 minutes, and you can talk to Jez, okay?
I will. Okay, let's go.
Hi
Jezebel.
Hello.
So this is Jezebel, and we're on our podcast, and you heard what we were doing. We're talking about just New York, the New York experience, being a witch in New York. during that period of time, you know, which is like, it's kind of over. I think I say a lot to people, it sort of ended around 9/11. Everything sort of changed in New York City after 9/11.
9/11 and the internet.
That's true.
Because that was the other thing. At one point, you know, you might find information like on the bulletin boards at the stores.
Right.
We used to have a group called New Moon New York that was an open networking group. It was not a coven. It was not meant to be a coven, but they would hold open Sabbaths and full moons and occasionally classes and workshops and things, which were for everyone. There was a circulating leadership. Joe and I participated in that a lot. And then we had things with the Grove as well as the Minoan Sisterhood going on at Enchantments. And there were a few other. There was one group called Gateway that was around a few years. Just some different things to try to get people to know each other. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, Pagan Pride came in.
Right.
And then there's some people doing Pagan Pride. And then we had the Witches Ball, which is always a big, fabulous event as well. And Joe just said something. He was supposed to be quiet. But yes, that was the event of the season where people would dress up. And then a lot of those people who were interested would come just, I mean, there was, I guess, I hate to use the word muggles, but it probably covers what we need to say, just to come and see what do the witches do. And it was usually had some pagan musicians and a ritual and performances. And these are some large-scale events. These, you remember, we would have over 100 people in the garden at the time.
Oh, yeah.
No, you're supposed to be quiet. And then New Moon New York did, shut up. Meltane in the park, they might have 500 people.
Oh, yeah.
And that would have several maypoles going and people doing security.
Yep.
And there would be usually more people presenting the rituals or something like that than we would have at a... If we get 30 people at one of our circles here... And we just don't have... We've done some mini theatrical things where we've had maybe 10 people and they're reading off the script. And one year for Pagan Pride here, we did do a ritual theater presentation. But we used to do things, so there'd be like, you know, a cast of 20 to 30 people and we'd have dancers and musicians and you remember the kind of theatrical stuff that...
Yep, I was part of those, I remember. With the sirens singing
people.
And drummers and dancing and it was always...
Yeah, and major part in getting people involved in the singing and the movement. And that was always with our circles, we wanted them to be active. And I think that's one thing we may have done to change the dynamic down here. Because when we first came down here and went to some of the circles, they felt more like church services where it might be the priest and priestess or maybe the maiden or someone. They would be talking the entire time. There was not drumming or chanting or anything participatory. And we really work to get people active. I've had a couple of drum groups that, again, people get involved and we did performances for a while and then they dropped off because we don't have the consistent numbers. There's also a group you may remember, Four Winds Earth Chorus, that was a part of that was very active. And we would perform at like interfaith events and things like that. So we would be around, we did things like World AIDS Day, and just being present and being visible until we're pagans and this is what we do, and be more active with the community.
Right.
Which again, Georgia, we don't have the numbers for that.
Right, right. And you know what the thing is, I'll say, because I'm still here and still scratching away at the world of witchcraft in New York City, it is smaller. It is not what it was. You don't get 500 people for Beltane in the park anymore. Maybe you get 50. You know, so because people are much more insular now. They stay home much more. They don't go out and do things as much as they used to.
They can do it around their computers and order their stuff online.
Right,
they
we were saying that.
The interaction.
Right. Right. And how, you know, and learning from somebody live, you know, and the reason, you know, you guys, of course, taught me and I studied with you guys, I studied in enchantments and, you know, it's easier to, I think, learn from a human than it is from a screen. You know, it's a feeling, it's movement.
Well, there's the opportunity for dialogue.
Right.
And we always welcome questions. And there were times that the answer was, it's not necessarily that the way we do it is right, but to keep the group focused,
right.
We can't have everybody scattered. So we've chosen these particular points of focus. And we didn't make up crap like, you know, this is the way it was in the ancient days or something.
Which which is great. A lot of people do that. And you guys were very specific about not to. You specifically, Jezebel, because of your history background We're very specific about dates and stuff and the truth behind the things, which is important.
We've challenged people at times, and there have been a few times we have not been popular because people start talking about the ancient matriarchy. Big Mouth chimes in and says, that was not how it happened. Bring out your sources, and I'll bring mine, and I will squash you. And
I do. It's good, though. It's important. It's important.
And people should not have to make up a phony past to validate their past.
Right.
And that's where, I mean, I feel like the other element that is so important, and I know you've talked about it as well, is the goddess element. We don't have to make up ancient matriarchies or say that everybody worshipped the goddess in prehistoric times or anything.
Right.
Yes, we have lost the divine feminine, and bringing that back is critical, whether you believe in them as entities or even as just to keep the female viewpoint within the literature and the mythos, and that's been so missing from the big three monotheisms. That I think we need to get that back, getting back to the concept of the divine feminine as well as the priestess. And we're involved in the UU here. There's a lot of female ministers, and they're very much pro-women, pro-choice, pro-LGBT, but there's still a lot of conservative religions that are very dangerous in their viewpoints and very negative towards major segments of the population.
Yes, yes, it's true. It is true. That's unfortunate. Hopefully we're on the cusp of that changing. I was going to ask you, since you're a woman, this is an interesting thing I talk about a lot with a lot of different people, the whole idea of the witch as a heroine, which is on television all over Netflix. We have Sabrina, we have The Craft coming back, we have all of these things that I even saw. There was a big fight with Sephora, the makeup company, was going to sell a witch kit, and there was a big outcry over that, just selling tarot cards and crystals and sage and saying, hey, you can wear this lipstick and now you're a witch, you know, that kind of a thing.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of younger women who are very, very much called to the path now. And they just are called because maybe it's Harry Potter, maybe it's Sabrina the Teenage, you know, witch.
It's out there a lot more with popular culture. I mean, the year The Craft came out, we went to the Grove that year, and it's like, I wish we see Grove running a nursery.
Yeah.
There was just so many really young people coming in.
Yeah.
And but the media, it does let people know there are options that a lot of people didn't know, especially pre-internet or in the South. I mean, New York has always been more out there, and there's parts of California that are out there that will have witchcraft stores, but a lot of the South did not have witchcraft stores, so there were some currents, but they were a lot more secretive, and it was more like you had to know somebody to know somebody.
Yeah, sure, sure.
And now, I mean, I think it's great that there's a lot more coming in. And yes, of course, there's the danger of the pop culture witches who just, you know, want to wear the right shade lipstick and color their hair and wave tarot or whatever.
Right.
And tarot cards also don't necessarily equate witchcraft.
Right, that's right.
Witches who use tarot.
Absolutely.
And a lot of the trappings, herbalism does not mean witchcraft.
Right.
There are all kinds of people who are interested in herbs or nature or things like that.
They're not witches.
I mean, there's Christian witches. There's actually a...
Yep.
And they don't like to talk about it, but if you do some research into Islam, there is Islamic witchcraft.
Yep,
there's
that's
Jewish
right.
Jewish witchcraft.
Yes.
Witchcraft and pagans are not the same thing.
That's right.
And I think people are getting a lot more specific about defining their path now. And the advantage is there is so much more scholarship.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of the old, as you know, the James Frazier Golden Bough type mythos was taught for a long time, and many witches believed it with all the dying god and the very rigid male-female definition type thing. And now people are looking into scholarship and realizing what we've said all along, and now it's nice that other people are acknowledging it, how paganism is region-specific, and Joe's been happy there's a lot more information now on Slavic paganism since the fall of the Iron Curtain, and that knowledge can come out. And again, the internet is making so, I mean, what we used to dig through libraries, like, where can we find out about this? It's like, oh, now you can just Google it.
Yeah, isn't that great?
But I wish I'd known this back when we were putting our first handout together. Because so much information now, but again, finding out how it's used. And again, it can be overwhelming.
Yeah, yeah, it is. It is a lot. You're, like you're saying, there's different paths, different countries, different cultures. There's paganism within each area of the world. So which one would you choose and why would you choose it? And how do you study it and where do you go? That's a big question for a lot of people I bump into, you know, what to do. And also then there's the secondary thing where it's not, so many people, it's not even a religion or a path. It's just magic. They just want to do magic.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. And that's a whole nother aspect in itself that people, and again, it's like there's that magician series on sci-fi and so much in pop culture and the Harry Potter and the offshoots and the magic that's used in a lot of the fantasy sword and sorcery type dramas that are a lot more popular. And on one hand, I love it because this is the kind of stuff that I wish there'd been more of when I was a kid.
Me too.
There is more interest in a lot of the, I mean, Game of Thrones.
Yep.
That sort of story that we didn't have.
Right.
And again, people can get unrealistic and people want escapism. Mm-hmm. Which I understand to some extent, and the whole interest in LARPing and cosplay and these multiverses that, like, I've been able to go to Dragon Con now. I don't know if you've ever been to
I know what that is, but that must be great.
So multi-genre, and it's like, you know, in one day you can, one day I was in a belly dance show, I went to hear a goth band, a steampunk party, and at a panel on women in film, and it's just amazing.
Amazing, that's great.
So much creativity, and I think the arts have become so much more a part of a lot of these subgenres, and nerd culture has finally come out, and we're part of it here too, and I've been able to present more pagan characters, and sometimes you can kind of slide them through as cosplay, as I used to at times slide them through an interest in history or interest in mythology, and you are a lot more aware, and the Rick Riordan books with Percy Jackson and all that, and Neil Gaiman, there's just a lot more literature that people know more
they do
about it than they used to.
That's true.
Which is good. And it's like anything else, that what they do with it, hopefully they will do some serious study and not just get caught up in the cool wardrobe, because it's not just cool wardrobe, but again, people like it. The trappings, I like the trappings.
I do too.
I love dressing up.
Me too.
And having all the gear and the statues, even though they can't knock them over.
And all those rings and jewelry and all that. Yes, yes. And, you know, it's wonderful.
Lovely.
It is. It's beautiful. It's beautiful stuff. So why not, you know? But that doesn't make you a pagan or necessarily a witch. Although people will call themselves a witch no matter what. They'll just say, I'm a witch, and that I am. And that's it.
And it's like how they, and people have different definitions of what a witch is.
Right.
And for some, it's just being not part of the mainstream.
Right.
And at this point, considering what we are up against with the conservative tide, I really think pagans criticizing each other, oh, well, who's really a pagan, and who's got the lineage, and who practices harder, and it's like, come on, at least we are roughly on the same side. We are liberal and progressive and welcoming of people's differences, and hopefully more compassionate towards their shadows and their eccentricities and the thing that mainstream culture would mock. And
nature. I have to jump in with that. You know, nature, of course. You know, there's at least we have people who care about the earth herself or itself and what we live on, and the animals.
Have to be pagan to do that.
No, of course not.
There are Christians who are eco-aware. There are pagans who are eco. There are humanists who are eco-aware and fiercely defending the earth. So as far as I'm concerned, there are allies.
Do you know, I read there are more of us than Episcopals right now out there.
Yeah.
So that's an interesting fact. I was like, really? Wow. That's cool.
Well, we weren't founded because a king wanted a divorce.
That's right. It's been here a while longer.
Because the Episcopals are basically the American Anglicans, and look where the Anglican Church came from.
Yeah, that's a good answer to that. Yeah. Why? Yeah.
I mean, we know enough of the Christian history, too, and, and they have their own schisms and different ways of doing things. I mean, I would really like Catholicism if it weren't for the theology.
Yeah.
I mean, the ancients and the rogues and and
very pretty.
Cathedrals?
It's
wow,
beautiful.
I wish we had them.
The art, yeah.
We have the budget for them. So, yeah.
Well, maybe we will. You know, maybe as it goes, it'll change. And just one more thing I wanted to say to you, that a lot of people are saying that they're witches because they're feminists. I had this, there's a place in here now in Brooklyn called Catland, which is a really cool witchcraft store. And they have all kinds of lectures and stuff in there, and they teach. But they have this group that meets, and they curse Trump, and they've cursed all these other politicians. And they got Kavanaugh, and they got a lot of press on that. And a lot of anger came towards them. But a lot of them were saying it's because we're feminists, that witches are feminists, and that they want to protect women. That's because of the goddess and all this kind of thing. So what do you think about that? I was wondering.
That is not anything new. That was back to the Budapest, and there were other groups that, and I mean, if I would basically have to go back to drawing down the moon to get the specific references. But there were the feminism versus, or not so much versus, but the connection with paganism going back to the 60s and women finding power in the goddess story. So they were pagans or not, but wanting to find that kind of inspiration that was not in mainstream culture. And the image of the witch as someone who defied society, someone who could stand on her own, did not need a man, so to speak, and was powerful and was often targeted by the patriarchy.
Mm-hmm.
And we know a lot of the women who were burned and hanged and persecuted were not witches in the sense of our pagan witches, but they were just poor or outcast or had property that some man wanted to claim for various other reasons. So it's been used and abused in many ways, and now the idea of the glamorous witch, and we recently, when we had some pictures of the other two ladies and I who were playing the witches in Macbeth, there was actually a comment online, it's like, you all are too pretty to be witches. So I was like,
oh, no.
What are supposed to be?
Yeah, but American Horror Story, they're wearing Gucci, you know?
Yeah. Well, we were not wearing Gucci, but we were in our black, and we had blonde brunette and a redhead with long hair flying. So,
nice,
yeah.
Nice. Beautiful.
It's, again, challenging people's concepts of what the witches are. Shakespeare's concept of witches was very different than
right.
what ours would be. Today.
Right, of course.
So it's one of those malleable words, which, you know, we're shapeshifters, so again, it's finding out what people mean by witch. Some people say are very serious about witches and Wiccans not being the same thing, and some say Wiccans are all witches, and it's a lot different terminology and how they want to use it. Wicca does have the advantage of being the most organized, relatively speaking, of many of the pagan paths.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that's a bad thing. The downside with everybody like Taylor making their own path is great, but it doesn't work in terms of group action.
Mm-hmm.
And there are times that we do need to do more collective group action, even if their paths are different.
Mm-hmm.
And I know at times in our group we would share like there's a wonderful article online called Pentagram and versus the Hammer, which was some of the differences between communication styles of Asatru and Wiccan, and Wiccan wanting to find agreement and listen to the other side and be agreeable and conciliatory, and the Asatru are like, well, if you can't argue and defend your beliefs, then you must be weak-willed and not really have a path. And looking at the different communication styles and why there is so much disagreement, and yes, there unfortunately are hardline Sunday pagans that if you don't believe and worship and do your set of offerings every morning they're as rigid as some of the Christians that you must believe. And traditionally pagans do not have that emphasis on belief because you're there. You don't necessarily have to believe in them because it's already around you. There's trees around you. There's the earth and the sun and the sky and the sea and all of that. So speaking to multiplicity of paths and definitions of what you are supposed to be, and Joe and I have both been criticized, and there was another women's group at one point in New York, and I went to one of their circles, and that was, I was looking, I took my Asame, and basically, at the end of the circle, there was food and all that, and somebody put out cheese and nothing to cut it with. So I get my Asami and start cutting it. I was expecting the usual, oh, you must not use your ritual tool for mundane purpose. We got a lot, and we never had those definitions. We have roasted meat from the coven sword. But I'm cutting up the cheese, and, what? You have a knife? We're still living on the patriarchy!
What? Oh, wow.
Ever heard of Morrigan? Ever heard of Artemis? Oh. What is with these people?
Oh, that's weird. Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, that is weird.
It is weird.
So, it's just, well, and that's where I run into issues with some versions of, I guess I would call it the pink cloud feminist, where, oh, women are just gentle and loving and nurturing, and mm-hmm, we just mm-hmm. want babies, and we're loving mothers, and
yep.
I am not maternal. Never had kids, never wanted them, never regretted not having them.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I'm
that's a different kind of a... that's a different kind of a... Well, you're more of a warrior princess than an Earth Mother, I think.
Yeah. And that's where sometimes the goddess often sounds like Virgin Mary in many ways.
Yeah.
And that overall, oh, she's always loving and nurturing kind of thing. No, she can kick butt, and she's a warrior, and
right.
she's a healer,
that's right.
and she's a dancer, and she's a fighter, and she's an artist, and she's a poet, and she's a scholar, and the multiplicity of paths and choices. And that's what I've said, and I've said this from the pulpit at UU, because occasionally they let me do services there.
Nice.
That one of the advantages of polytheism is multiple gods not getting along. And that's why oftentimes things don't work out, or things don't work the way we wanted them to, because when you look at this monotheistic, omniscient, omnipresent God, then if God knows all and can do and has all this power, why do bad things happen?
Mm-hmm. That's a good question. A lot of people ask.
I have people have gone through theological contortions to try to explain that. It's like, no. If they really know and they can really have that power, then why would they let it?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
If they love these creative beings, it's like, you know, if I can do something for my cats to not hurt them, mm-hmm. I will.
Right.
So why can they this God not take care of it?
Right.
You know, we have two cats that are on heart medicine. They fight us every day, and I would love them to be healthy without having to give them the heart medicine.
Right.
So do not give them any reason why these cats have to go through this.
Right. I agree with that. That's really interesting.
Yeah, so
I have to say, it's really wonderful to hear you talk. I would say, I said to Joe, you ought to think about making your own podcast, because I think what you have to say and what he has to say is important for those that are coming after us. That's why I kind of do this. I don't get paid for it, of course, as we all know. Mm-hmm. It's not going to pay me anything. But it's to keep going. And people write to me who are... when they listen to this podcast, and hi out there to you guys who are listening, they write to me from all different places, and some of them are very scared, and some of them are they can't find the information. If they know, we know how, because we've been educated, and thank you for educating. Mm-hmm. So they don't know how, and they don't know where to look or how to Google it anyway. And then they have fear, you know, around it.
Yeah,
so,
and there's some people that still can't get certain things delivered to their houses or their neighborhood.
Right, or be afraid anybody would see it, you know, then there's that, you know. So maybe consider, you know, doing that, because I think that I put you guys on because I thought, well, this is very important, which I know you're brilliant, you are, and Joe is as well in his own beautiful way, and we get to hear this stuff, which I experienced live. And it wasn't only just with you guys, of course. I bumped into Rhea and then worked with her for a while, and Anthony for a while, and a whole bunch of other people that I was fed this wonderful information from so many different perspectives and points of view. And I hate to see that these voices are not out there. So I say, go do a podcast. It's pretty free.
Thank you. Yeah. The technology. I keep saying we should probably do a YouTube series.
Yeah, you should. That's a good way to start. Yeah.
Just right now, one thing when we were doing the Grove and the Coven and all that is I put aside a lot of my own performing missed out on some opportunities.
Yeah, yeah.
So I've also gotten involved here. We actually have a great film community.
Nice.
As well as theater. We're working on my project this upcoming week is filming our Shakespeare and also doing a lot of dance performances. And
good,
there
good.
There is some pagan elements in those, but there's a part of me that right now really wants to do this kind of creative work
that
I wasn't always able to do in New York.
Mm-hmm.
The arts community is a lot looser down here. I mean, you know, the New York audition scene would be like 500 people submitting for one role.
Right, right.
And things like that. So down here, it's a lot easier. And until the new heartbeat law chases away all the film companies, there's
mm-hmm.
a lot more production, a lot more independent stuff I'm involved in.
That's wonderful.
Projects
good.
That I love very much. And so I'm also working on recording some of my poetry and things like that. We actually filmed one of my poems in Salem called Challenge of the Witches that I should probably send to you. I sent it around to Rhea and Anthony and all my New York people when I first did it. We premiered it at a local film festival. So
please do, because I will put that on this podcast. What I'm going to have to do now is listen to this podcast and pick out every book you guys mentioned and every author you guys mentioned and find links for everybody to come and find these things that you brought up. So,
some of the main books, so many of the books just rehash a lot of stuff, especially for beginners.
Right.
And one of the best ones still from our Grove reading list was Scott Cunningham's Wicca for the Solitary Practitioner.
Great, that's a great book.
Yeah,
that's a great book.
Starhawk, and she keeps updating her stuff. We actually hosted her at Enchantment, one of our last years there. She was there protesting the Republicans.
Yeah.
We had a group that met in the garden, and then she did a ritual at one of the parks that was amazing. And then, of course, the Witch's Bible for the old traditional type Wicca with Janet and Stuart. And Janet and Gavin are still doing something.
Yes, they are. Yes.
Those are still three of the top. And then Margot Adler's Drawing Down the Moon.
Great book.
Information on, very detailed on some of the types of paganism and the history. And she does cover some of the, what we might call the para-pagan groups that use the concept of the goddess and the witch as archetypes for feminism and the dovetailing of paganism with ecology, which was not in some of the early paganism that was starting in the 50s, because that was more about discovering the ancient deities and working with some of the different, I think that's the other thing that I tell people, especially when, since we're working with a lot of the UUs, and if you are not in an open area, find a UU church, because they are pretty progressive, and there's probably going to be some pagans there, and you might be able to do some pagan circles or events through UU, or if you ask questions there, they will probably be supportive. UU has been a great resource for people who don't have other things, and you also tell people, I'm part of a church, and not be lying.
Right. That's good.
But our style of worship, a lot more participatory, a lot more guided meditation. We might be used to the 10 to 15 minute guided meditations, a lot of the chanting and dancing. And the last circle we did was about an hour of sacred dance that everyone loved.
Nice.
Sails and different body parts, and just getting that type of physical freedom that is so important, especially for women, but also for men.
I'm so glad you guys are still doing all this stuff. You're doing so much. I mean, you're really doing a lot, really. Just listening to you, it's so much stuff. The creative work, which I had said to Joe, is infused in your spiritual work and vice versa, which is beautiful, you know, really beautiful. And you both are, and when I speak to you, it's exciting. It excites me because it's intelligent and well thought out and creative and powerful and passionate, you know. And I hope that when people hear you guys, they go, whoa, this is what? Who are these guys? And what is this? And how can it be, you know, so it can be a fulfilling, wonderful path for life, and that this happened over there in up here in New York, and it's happening down now there in Georgia, and you've infused all that energy and all that information into your work. I think that's wonderful now. And if people want to find you in Georgia, they can. If they're in Augusta, they can probably find you, right?
Definitely.
Okay, good.
Sure, let us know the link to the podcast so we can share it around
yes.
as well.
Yes, I will do that. Do you have any words you want to leave us with, our lovely audience? By the way, we reach 57,000 people pretty much,
wow, that's great.
Yes.
Basically, what we used to say with Grove is, don't check your brains at the door and do your research, find out, but realize nobody's perfect, and finding out what works for you, but will also enable you to work with other people.
Mm-hmm. Great. Good. Does Joe want to say anything else?
That we still maintain the community. Joe, any parting words?
Does he want to say anything before he flies away?
Here he is.
Oh,
okay. Bye, guys. Here's Joe.
Thank you, Jezebel. Thank you very much for your time.
Hey, it's me. But I'll tell you, I'll ask a question. Is there anything else you'd like to know that I could fill in the details? If you have any more questions, I'll be happy to answer them
well,
for you.
Yeah, I was thinking about, just what it was like to, I remember this one thing, and you can expound on this if you like. I was in the store once with you there, of course, and there was a song by the Talking Heads that came on. It's Watch Out, You Might Get What You're After, right, is the beginning of the song. And I remember you specifically saying, I should leave this on a loop all the time so that everybody who comes in here can hear that based on what might happen when they do magic or what might happen if they get involved in magic. So just tell me briefly, like what kind of people would come into that store and what did they buy and what did they want? I mean, what was the general,
brother. Okay. How many types of people are there out there in the world right now?
Right. Mm-hmm. Zillions,
okay.
Right?
Okay, at least. Right. Now, it's going to be very simple. Everybody needs and wants something. Everybody. Okay? There's no excuses under the sun, no exceptions under the sun. Everybody needs and wants something. And this is something I would like people to understand. Human beings are self-aware. And in being self-aware, we are selfish. Okay? It's just to what degree do you use your selfishness to get what you want and deny this to everybody else? Mm-hmm. Point of example, Mohandas Gandhi. He wanted a free India, all right? He took on the British Raj. He was a very, to use an old term, a very uppity man because he dared face the power of the British Raj to help liberate India.
Mm.
He wanted a free India. Now, we would say that's being altruistic. Well, no, it's what he wanted. He represented millions of Indians who wanted the same thing. Here in America, Martin Luther King Jr., he wanted equality and justice for his people. He represented millions of people who wanted this. There is nothing wrong in wanting. Mm. If you do not want, you do not achieve. You do not work for something. Nobody does anything without the thought of getting something back in return.
Mm.
Put yourself through hell and high water learning how to do interviews and not say you want a job.
Mm-hmm.
You don't spend hours and hours in college struggling for a degree and then saying, well, I really don't want it. No, there's no harm in it. People want to be loved. People want to be healthy. People want to be happy. Mm-hmm. People want the basic needs met. And sometimes life gives you a big fat no in any of these areas.
Mm-hmm.
And you couldn't come up with 1,000 reasons why it happened. You could say it's your karma. You could say, someone's working against you. You could say life just sucks. And until we find one answer that works in every instance, nobody's exempted from suffering. Nobody's exempted from anything.
Mm-hmm.
I forget it was. I know Jim Morrison said something to the effect, and it's a slightly extended version, and I say this all the time. Nobody gets out of this world alive and unharmed.
Right.
Okay? Once you accept that as a fact, your life gets so much easier.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Nobody is exempt from problems.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now how you approach these problems, I remember one time a little boy came in who was being victimized by older kids in his school.
Mm.
And I was saying, you know, maybe you should talk your parents into having you take karate lessons. You know, I mean, you're going to have to grow up and face people like this all through your life.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Well, one of the other people that said, no, all you have to do is light this white candle and
mm-hmm.
pray to the goddess to protect you, and she will. And I looked at that person, I said, like she protected the millions of others, these people who were burned at the stake, mm-hmm. right.
All right, good. See, this is what I was asking, the logic behind the thing, right? You have to have logic
right.
behind what you desire and be clear
right.
about it, right? Right.
Yeah, like I know you heard me say this in Grove.
Mm-hmm.
Our ancient, most remote ancestors did their dances, did their hunting magic. They did not expect to find the animal skinned and cooked outside the cave.
Right. they didn't have seamless, right. Yeah.
Right. They had to go out there and hunt those critters down.
Right, right.
And that's, you see, I think that's one of the problems people have with, I mean, the first thing I'll tell anybody is, the only guarantee I will make, I will give you about any spell is this. There's no guarantee.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay? That's something I'll tell, this is coming from somebody with over 40 years experience. The only guarantee you should have with any spell is there's no guarantee.
Mm-hmm.
That's number one. Number two. Before you go to change the outside environment, you've got to change your internal environment.
Right, right.
It's that you've got to learn yourself. You've got to understand yourself. You've got to really start at that. Look at your strengths and weaknesses and say, okay, now what do I have going for me? What do I have going against me? What can I do to make myself a better and stronger person?
Mm-hmm.
The best, the rituals and meditations and all that, they should be geared around that for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
The gods and goddesses were cultural icons.
Mm-hmm, right.
We have as, what I meant by that is they were symbols of those cultures.
Right.
It doesn't matter if you're into the Egyptian, the Greek. I tend to favor more of the Northern European. Jez tends to favor the Egyptian and Middle Eastern.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I tend to be more Norse oriented, and I've also been exploring my Slavic ancestral past too.
Nice.
But like I said, but the one thing that they all had in common were the gods were symbols of those cultures.
Right.
The stories, their mythology, and this is very important. You know, we use the word, oh, that's a myth, meaning it's a fable, it's a story, it's not true. Myth comes from the Greek word mythos, and mythos meant more like tradition. This was something that everybody in that culture was connected to. It was their, they called Norse tradition, their Celtic tradition, their Greek. In fact, most of these ancient cultures didn't even have a word for religion. Did you know that?
No, I didn't know that. Mm-mm.
Yeah. If you were to look, if you read the old text, the old writings, and I know you have,
mm-hmm.
true or false, do they not say it was the way of the Greek, or it was the way of the Egyptian, or it was the way of this one? When they say it was the way, that meant their religion and their society.
Mm-hmm. Right.
This is what they believed. This is what they held sacred. Now, the other thing is, you wonder, how did pagan cultures deal with each other? In a sense of, you know, every culture had their own mythology. Well, it was very simple. You pray to who you want to, and I'll pray to who I want to.
Right, right. That's what we're going back to, though. Okay. Isn't that kind of sort of happening, I think? You know, we're talking about before with Judd, how, you know, it's become sort of this eclectic thing that people choose what they like, and they can just follow any path they choose based on what they learn or read or experience or what feels good inside, at least in America,
well,
you know.
See, well, I can see the positive and negative side of that, and the positive side is you have the diversity, you have the freedom, you have the wherewithal in this society to follow whatever spiritual path you want. But I also encourage, and I stand by this, and I can be a bit of a stickler on it. Before you start, you know, cafeteriarizing your past, like if you want to learn the Norse past, read the Eddas, read the serious historical books on what Norse culture was like. Become thoroughly immersed in it. And then you, if you want to, you know, include something else, okay, but then you have to ask yourself, how will that fit?
Mm-hmm.
Look, I have my differences with Christianity and Islam and Judaism, and my major difference is simply, how do you know you're the right one?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
How do you know yours is the one true right path? How do you judge it? How do you test it? How do you prove it?
Mm-hmm, right. Mm-hmm.
Can you prove to me Yahweh exists, Jesus was who you say he was, Allah is real, and then you tell me that Odin and Freya and all the others aren't real because they were made up by the minds of man? Well, what makes you think your gods are any different?
Right, right, right. That's right. That's what needs to be said to a lot of people. Yeah, that's smart. Yes.
Yeah, how can you prove your... Oh, you've got a book that says your God is real? Guess what? I have a book that says my God is real.
Right.
I once had this debate with a Christian when I was in college, and I said, look, you could bring in 100 books that say you're right, and I could bring in 100 books that say I'm right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And what will we have? 2 people in a room with 200 books and nothing else.
No proof of anything, right? Exactly.
Exactly. Now, I call myself a Freya's Godi.
Okay.
Does that mean, okay, what that means is I am a priest of Freya.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Does that mean... Yes, Jez jokes about the fact that after I die, I am going to go to Volkvang, which is Freya's hall, and she is going to, and as I enter, everybody's going to lift their horns in mead and sing my praises, and when I approach Freya, she's going to hand me the golden kitty scoop. And my job will be for all eternity to scoop Freya's kitty litter boxes.
Well, what an honor.
Exactly. I may be a pooper scooper, but I'm Freya's pooper scooper, damn it.
Oh, hallelujah.
Right, and what I'm saying is, do I actually believe that Freya exists as a real entity? No,
right,
I really can't say I believe this because believe, actually, here's something that's important.
Mm-hmm.
The word believe, actually, you know where it comes from? It comes from the word beloved.
Okay.
When you believe something, you love this
idea. You love
it. You love this notion. Exactly.
That's smart.
Okay,
that's wonderful.
This is something really important. Do I believe that there is an entity called Freya? Not in the sense of an actual being like you and I are being, but I do believe that there is an ideal,
mm-hmm.
and she represents this ideal.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And that she represents a woman of power, of beauty, of strength, of courage. She is the goddess of birth and death, of magic, sexuality, power. You know, she leads the Valkyrie.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
She leads the choosers of the slain, and she gets first dibs, according to Norse mythology. Oh, and in being a Freya's Godi, it's my duty to be protective of women, to teach, to help, to be there if need be.
Mm.
And in that sense, I believe in the ideal that she represents. And how can I, a man, be a priest of a goddess? Why not? You've never heard of the sacred marriage?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The idea of that I am enamored of this idea, and that I uphold it, and that I do my best for it. That's how I view it. I will teach people. You know, I've helped women in self. I've taught. I've co-assisted in women's self-defense classes. And
mm-hmm.
my joke there was, where else can I get a bunch of women beating up on me and not have to pay for it?
All right. On that note, I'm going to cut you off. We should do
okay.
a number. We should do a second one, I think, and I'll get in touch with
okay.
you guys regarding that. We can like even pick subjects and do it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. She said I gotta have my last words. She never said how long.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. I'm gonna run out of room on my recording. That's all. So I keep going all day because this is fascinating to me, and I'm sure it's fascinating to the people who listen. You know, people that listen to this podcast are all over the place, and in all different levels of experience and paganism and witchcraft and Wicca. And they're curious,
okay.
And that's why they're listening. So I'm thanking you both as teachers and really superior teachers to help,
okay,
not just that you help me,
I
but you're helping everybody else too. So thank you for that. Go ahead, finish that.
Oh, you're welcome. I want to say, this was taught to me, believe it or not, by a rabbi. And years ago, when I was in college, I took a course in comparative religions. So I had to interview different people from different faiths, and one of the people I had to interview was a rabbi.
Mm.
And this is something that stuck with me, and this is something that can be applied to any religion, and this is what it is. I asked the rabbi a question of, how do you know, how can you really be certain that you lived a good life, that you didn't waste your time on this planet? And he said it's very easy, and this is what he told me. He said, when you are in your final days and you're looking back over your life and all the things that you have done, if you cannot find one person whose life has not been made better by knowing you, then you have wasted your time.
Mm. Wonderful. That's really brilliant. Nice thing to think about. Thank you for that.
You're very welcome. And I hope that what I said... And I hope that anybody who hears this podcast, I hope I've said something that has, you know, that makes an impact in their lives for the better.
Of course you did. I already changed me, as you always do. It's alchemical. And Jezebel as well. So you're changing me, and I'm advanced already. I have to say I am. I'm already one of the elders already now. Thank you very much. But if I am...
You're very, very welcome.
Then if I'm being changed, then you know somebody out in a college dorm somewhere who's listening to this is actually learning so many things, and you're really spreading blessings. So thank you for that. And thank you, Jezebel, for all your time and all of your brilliance. And I, so this will be up soon. I'll put it together. I have to edit some, you know, just into my podcast, and I'll give you the link, and please do share it. All right.
Okay. Will do.
All right.
Thank you, Mary. Have a good one.
You too. Many blessings. Bye-bye.
So that was great, wasn't it? Really amazing. Lots of information too. So hopefully, what's that? Okay, so that was it. That was Joe and Jezebel talking to us from Augusta, Georgia, and talking about New York. Probably he's talking about starting at Enchantments in 1995, and that's why I met them like maybe the year after that. And they were there until 2005. He was in New York with her, and then they moved, and they're down south, and they sound great, and they're doing wonderfully. This was an important part of my experience coming into the scene of witchcraft in New York City. Just being in this particular yard that everybody talks about behind the store. I know that if you're not in New York, that sounds weird, that this yard really wasn't just nothing but a small piece of dirt with sometimes bonfire in the middle of it, which was totally illegal for sure, and a tree and some statues, and where the Minoan sisterhood and brotherhood would meet, and where I learned everything I know, at least the beginning parts of what I know. The rest of what I know comes from my own experience, but learning with others, my friends that I still have to today, and then end up initiating with them and working with them for, I had to be another maybe 10 or more years doing that. I do mourn the fact that that store is closed very much, as I know many do. It just sort of changed. Everything changed. As we said, 9/11 sort of changed the way the city worked very much, especially downtown where a lot of this was going on. And then the internet, as Jezebel brought up, which is true, which made it easier for people to find things, but less likely that people would find them in person. And it sort of just got less and less. It is still out there. And if you listen to what they had to say about covens and groups and finding the right people, you can take good lessons from that stuff that they said. So if you're interested in that, please let me know. I can always help people find ways to find people maybe on the internet. I can ask around in my different witchcraft groups for you. Again, it's important that you reach out to whomever you feel comfortable with. I, at this point, am still studying. I'm still a student, of course, even though I am pretty experienced at this point. Not as experienced, obviously, as Joe, who's been doing this since he's 18. I got into it later in my life, but I am experienced and I'm still learning. I'm working with the Fellowship of Isis now and starting an ICM in New York City. And what that means is that I'm studying with people online, because that's what it is. And I get to speak to women and men from all over the world, Australia, England, Paraguay, all through America. So there's a point to the internet being good and wonderful and helpful for us in learning instances. But on the other hand, it's also different to stand in a group of 100 people in a very small backyard in New York City in the rain and call in the goddess for the first time. So, which is better, I don't know. Whatever it is, it's you know, whatever you'd like to try, it's going to be up to you. So here we are. It is May 28th, 2019. This is Mary Elizabeth McCary and my little podcast about magic. Hope you are well. Sabbath coming up soon. We have midsummer around the corner on June 21st. That is the longest day of the year, and summer solstice and winter solstice in the Southern Hemisphere. So we can talk about that in a week or so. And until then, watch the moon go waning and be full of power. And I hope that you get all that you ever desired. Reach out for information. I'm here to offer it. Thank you and have a lovely evening or afternoon or morning. Bye.
Yes, I am a witch, and I have conjured you for my bidding, and all my charms and all my accidents are all just in. you.